Welcome to Beyond the Gates, a tradition of innovation. This is season 3, and we have a special edition show this afternoon. Hero and HPC, Erdc Supercomputer honors Cal Carpenter. Super honored, and I'm getting all choked up because I am super honored. I have with me today Cal Carpenter, retired Marine Corporal and youngest living Medal of Honor recipient. Hello, how are you doing, Cal? I can't say your name.
Oh, no, it's okay. You did great.
Because again, I'm super honored.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And to say I'm doing great would be an understatement today. It's been an amazing day, an incredible once-in-a-lifetime experience, although they've given me an open invitation to come back. So this will not be the only time. But for today, it's just been life-changing, really. And it's just the only thing that's been better than the experience is the people.
Wow. That's a great. We're going to use that quote, by the way.
All right.
So, okay. So tell me about yourself and your background. And so you're a Mississippi native, correct?
I am. Yes, okay. I am. I was born in Mississippi 34 years ago. And it's always good to come back to my home state. All of my family is still here throughout the state. And so we got to do business today and visit with family tomorrow. But moving around, growing up and living in various places, this was, the steadfast place to always come back to. And every single time is just as much love, support, and hospitality as the next.
The South, you just can't beat it, can you?
You can't.
So, what inspired you to join the Marine Corps?
I wanted to do something greater than myself or any one individual. And also, growing up, I felt like I had pushed myself to my own boundaries. You know, growing up on all kinds of different sports fields and with different, challenges, I always felt like, I worked as hard as I could. I gave my best effort. And so, along with wanting to do something greater than myself, I also wanted something that would push me into the unknown and something that would allow me to discover who I really was and who I could become. Now, they say, be careful what you wish for, because clearly I got that. But, I would not change or trade or erase one second of my journey, as difficult and painful and unknown as it has been at times. I joked about it, but I am so grateful that I earned the title Marine and I was pushed into that world of the unknown, because when I joined, I felt like becoming a Marine and serving was truly my path of purpose. And so to now, 13 years after injury, 14 years after joining the military, I do feel like I accomplished that, and I served and I sacrificed, and I'm very fulfilled in knowing that I did that when I had the opportunity.
You're so inspirational. So can you talk about what happened in Afghanistan on November 21st, 2010?
So November 21st, 2010 was a day that changed my body and my perspective and my purpose in life forever. And myself and a best friend and fellow Marine were on top of a roof. And for a little bit of context, this was 4 months into our 7-month deployment at the time. And still today, roughly, Marines deploy for roughly 7 months at a time. And so every single day for that entire 4 months, it was never a question of, I wonder if we're going to get shot at today. It was just a matter of when. And every single day from sunup to sundown was really a fight for survival. And we had no vehicles. We did everything on foot patrols. There were no roads or infrastructure that led to where we were. We had to be helicoptered in, and a very, very volatile region. And so 4 months into that deployment on November 21st, about a day and a half before I was injured, my squad was tasked, and I only lived and operated with a platoon of Marines that entire deployment, which is roughly 60 Marines, broken down into three or four squads. And my squad was tasked with pushing south to a seemingly nearby village, but when you're walking through flooded farmland and canals and very thick vegetation, I think a lot of people, whether for movies or however, see Afghanistan as a mountainous, rugged, more arid terrain, mm-hmm. which is very true for certain parts of the country. But where we were, I would consider it like a mild Vietnam type environment. And so it was very difficult, especially with our 50 to 100 pounds of gear. You know, you're sinking in mud up to your knees sometimes. You have your weapons over your head and you're wading through sewage canals and waterways. You know, anything to avoid, because if it's difficult for Marines to get through, you're kind of assuming that, you know, the local population isn't going to go through all that to booby trap these walkways or waterways that most would not take. And so very difficult terrain, but we were tasked with pushing south to this village. And anytime we left our compound that entire 4 months, we got in engagements with the enemy. But anytime we pushed south, it was drastically more intense. The duration of the fighting, the intensity of it, the fighters themselves. And so we pushed south to establish a compound. And essentially in the very beginning, you take over a compound and you really just kind of plant your foot in the ground and you try to survive and hold that ground, which is the very beginning foundation of what will hopefully become a more consistent Marine presence in the area. You have to disrupt enemy activity to push the enemy out in order to create stability. And all of this was for the people of Afghanistan. You know, you have to have stability to dig fresh water wells, something that the children, you know, walk miles with no shoes on and old gas cans or dirty buckets to get muddy water out of an unsanitary well. You know, the children that asked us through interpreters is everywhere in America, like Disney World. The children that, you know, were killed, you know, assassinated because they were caught trying to learn how to read. And so, you know, a very evil enemy. And so we are tasked with taking over this compound and hopefully establishing what would become a functioning base in that area. And so November 21st, we had been in this compound for roughly a day and a half. And from the moment we took it over, it was constant grenade, AK-47, small arms, fire, and rocket attacks. And so we didn't have much sleep. We had only had what we could take down with us, food, water, and ammo in limited quantities. We didn't really sleep through the night. We would dig sandbags and fill sandbags all night for protection during the day. And we had already lost one of our only two roofs that we had to provide overwatch on because of a rocket destroying the integrity, and it eventually collapsed a few hours later. And so myself and a fellow Marine were on top of this one roof. And I think a lot of people wonder sometimes, why were two of you on one post? Because it's usually just one Marine on each post or corner of the compound. But because we had lost that roof, we consolidated our eyes and our effort. And at the time, we stood 4 hours of what we call post, but it's essentially just a lookout position. And we had made it to the very end of our four-hour shift when the enemy initiated a daylight attack. And I don't remember seeing the grenade, hearing the grenade, thinking about what I was going to do or how I was going to react. And actually, ironically, the last thing I remember before this attack, everything was eerily quiet. And because we had had grenade attacks for the past 24 hours, you know, sometimes Marines use dark humor to get through these very scary and uncertain times. And so I half jokingly said, you know, hey, Nick, what are we going to do when a grenade comes up here? And he said, I'm off this roof. I said, dude, I'm right behind you. And then the next thing I know, I felt like I had been hit really hard in the face. And I struggled to arrange the fragmented pieces because I didn't have any vision. It was as if I was looking at a TV with no connection, just white and gray static. My ears were immediately ringing extremely loud, just as they are this very moment we're doing this interview. And so it was extremely confusing. And I thought, I'm pretty sure I was in Afghanistan, but I'm pretty sure I was on a roof, but what could have injured me this bad on a roof? And then I thought, well, maybe I got off of the roof, went on a foot patrol, stepped on an IED, and the roof is just the last thing I can remember. And as I was struggling to arrange these fragmented pieces, something even more strange than what I was experiencing began to occur. And it felt like warm water was being poured all over me. And at first, because Marines are experts at messing with each other and pranking each other, I thought that my buddies were messing with me. And I thought, man, I can't believe in whatever's happened in this banged up state that I'm in, that my buddies are pouring warm water all over me right now. And that last fragmented piece allowed the other ones to fall into place. And I realized that what I was experiencing was not my buddies messing with me. It was not warm water, and I was profusely bleeding out. And so those last seemingly final moments, I thought about my family and how devastated my mom was going to be when my parents got the knock on the door by two Marines in uniform, or that government car pulled into the driveway to tell them that I would not be coming home alive. And in the last few moments, I said a quick and what I thought was a final prayer for anything I had done wrong in this life. And I faded from consciousness in the world for what I thought was the last time. Right. And, to my very pleasant and unexpected surprise, I woke up 5 weeks later on the other side of the world.
5 weeks. Wow.
5 weeks in a military hospital. And the first thing that I saw on my hospital room wall, which I didn't even know really I was in the hospital. I didn't know where I was. I went unconscious on a hot, dusty rooftop. I woke up in a freezing cold room with a bunch of people in camouflage around me. And there was snow building up on my window of this room that I was in. But from the moment I woke up, that's really when my journey began. And, that experience set a foundation for my life and my perspective and my outlook from that moment forward. That makes every day feel like a bonus round. And yes, life is hard for everyone, and I struggled through my journey, and there were very painful and long and dark, uncertain nights in the hospital room. But ultimately, I experienced the alternative. And so, you know, any struggles, you know, might not be easy.
Right.
But I encourage people that, you know, a good life is well earned. And at times it's very difficult, and it is a hard journey. But you know, it's a privilege to grow older. And it's a privilege to have every day, and it's a beautiful thing to have, you know, another minute of life and time, another day, another year. And so ultimately, I'm just so grateful that I woke up and that I've had, you know, this second opportunity at life to have the experience that I had had here today. And even simple things, you know, just waking up every morning, like every single day, big or small, like things happen in my life that that make me, that I can't help but to think, you know, wow, I was almost never here to experience this.
Right.
And so I just, you know, life is good.
Awesome. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Beyond the Gates, a special edition of the show. I have with me Kyle Carpenter. He's a retired Marine Corporal and youngest living Medal of Honor recipient. Now, speaking of the Medal of Honor, what was it like to receive the Medal of Honor from President Obama at the White House?
It was very surreal to be in the White House, to spend time with the president, to be in the Oval Office. As a history buff, you know, seeing that executive desk and so many different pictures and presidencies throughout the years, it was just very surreal, and it was very powerful and chaotic, I would say, controlled chaos.
Right.
Whether it was the hundreds of reporters there, you know, those that were keeping us on schedule, running the show, just so many different components to that go into just, you know, their daily lives, but my life on that day. And, you know, I was very run down. I was tired. You do so much prep work to get ready for that. And then the ceremony week that follows that. And then the national media tour week that follows that. And so I just say all that to say, in the moment, I was just trying to take it all in.
Right.
To be present, to not get overwhelmed, to keep breathing, to take a breath. But as time has gone on, and the more I've thought about it, the more just unbelievable it is. You know, I'm so humbled to be recognized by my country, by our military, by the Marine Corps, just by our nation. But it's very heavy as well. And after many years, I feel like, you know, perfected, at least just in my own words, how the Medal of Honor feels. And it's a beautiful burden. One that I am forever and extremely honored to hold and to carry and to do the best that I can with. But if you really think about it, the medal, which it seems like such an individual award, but it's really the complete opposite of that. Not only do we as recipients wear the medal for everyone who did it, make it home, and for all of those that deserve recognition but for whatever reason didn't get it. But if you really think about it, it represents, of course, my journey as a Marine and my service, but those Marines that were on the ground with me in Afghanistan, those that at 19 years old, you know, one morning with my buddy Dakota Hughes, were arguing about which hot sauce is the best. He's from Louisiana, so he was pretty much an expert in hot sauce. But, you know, we're arguing about what hot sauce is the best. And a few hours later, he took his last step and breath on this earth. So the Marines that were there with me. And then it represents my family and the medical teams who endured my recovery with me. It represents the Marine Corps as a whole. All of the Marines that paved the way through generations before I was even born. It represents our military, our nation, all of the children in Afghanistan, the people around the world, whether it's not knowing, you know, if they're going to survive through whatever they're going through to make it to that next day. It represents all of them and all of that. And go beyond that, and there are those that not only gave that last full measure of devotion in service to our country, but that are still guarded today in Arlington Cemetery at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. We still can't tell their families how or when exactly they gave, you know, their last breath.
Right.
And it represents those that it's just unbelievable to think about. Those that when they knew that they most likely were not going to make it out of the landing craft, charging towards the beaches on D-Day, charging towards Normandy. And if they made it out of the landing craft, that there was an even smaller chance that they would make it onto and off of that beach. And at 17, 18, 19 years old, when that landing craft door opened, they charged for it anyway, knowing the price, knowing the risk, knowing the cost. And so back to our very first question, to be a part of a military like that and a legacy and history and service members that have, you know, that I was fortunate enough to wear the same uniform as, you know, I'm so thankful that I served when I had the opportunity. And I'm thankful that, you know, I bled and I was injured and I gave, you know, sometimes I feel like it's not enough, but I'm thankful that I could give as much as I did, because there's so many generations and so many individuals that gave far more.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. So today has been a very exciting day for you and for ERDC. And this morning, we dedicated our newest supercomputer in your honor. Can you tell us how it feels to have that machine bear your name?
Extremely humbling. I'm not usually at a loss for words, but today it's been a challenge because it's just such an incredible creation. And it's such a testament to the great people I have met today that tediously for years of their life spent time building this and working on this for that greater cause. And this supercomputer, which I'm still going to need a little bit more time to learn exactly what a supercomputer is, but you know, this supercomputer, it's not just a computer. It's not just something for our military or Department of Defense or Corps of Engineers. It is going to become and is being implemented to become a tool to help our military, yes, but really our nation and humanity around the world. And so it's really just the experience and the computer itself, it's too powerful for words. But it also has a very beautiful component to it because it's so symbolic of just our work ethic and our vision, our mentality as Americans and as a military, that every person, every component, every piece of this machine and every person that worked on it is equally as important, equally as vital to the success of the mission and the continuation of the mission. And so any veterans listening to this, it always really gets to me when veterans start off when we're in a conversation by discounting what they've done.
Right.
And saying, oh, well, I was never in combat. I only did this. Well, what did you do? Well, I was logistics. Well, because of your job, I was able to have medical supplies on that helicopter that saved my life. Or because of your job, or here at ERDC, you know, in material science, to have those HESCO barriers or those, you know, concrete structures that are built in such a way that they better protect us on the front lines. Every single job and every person is equally as important, and only collectively, that's the amazing thing about people. We all are on our own journey. We all know our own things, but together know, that's why there's teamwork. Together, you bring all of those minds and people together, and this incredible creation is built, and this incredible, you know, mission continues of just learning more and becoming better, becoming stronger, and just so many things that have come from this. But I wanted to just emphasize that, you know, thousands of people probably worked on this. More than that, I'm probably way, you know, undercutting it. But it's just an amazing testament to, you know, good people coming together to work hard, to work together, and to do something much greater than themselves or any one individual.
Awesome. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Beyond the Gates, a special edition of the show. I'm speaking with Cal Carpenter. He's a retired Marine corporal and a youngest living Medal of Honor recipient. So we're going to close out with the last question. What message or advice would you like to share with listeners, especially other veterans or anyone who is facing adversity in their lives?
Keep going.
Awesome.
Keep going. Again, life is tough. Whether people show it or not, everyone struggles. The adversity of life and the scars that we share is the common thread throughout every single person in this world. There's no such thing as a perfect plan. You don't have to know exactly what's coming next. You don't have to have, you know, that well laid out plan. Sometimes all you can do and all you have to do is take that small, shaky, uncertain step forward. But just know that it's okay to struggle. It's okay to have bad days. Everyone does. It's okay to get knocked down, which if you're alive and on this journey, inevitably that will happen. But just know that you can always get back up, that your mind and body are far stronger than you could ever imagine. There's always a silver lining and light at the end of the tunnel, even though it can be very faint sometimes. But you can always get back up. You can always overcome. You can always achieve victory. Even if you lose, you can achieve victory. And ultimately, life is worth everything you've got.
Awesome. Kyle, thank you so much. It's been quite an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for being here. And thank you for listening to Beyond the Gates, a tradition of innovation. And we'll come back at you next time. Have a great day.
Bye-bye, everyone.